Okay, let's take a look at Acts chapter 6. This is new material for us. We introduced, as I said, this material last week. Let's look at Acts 6. I don't think we'll get any further than verse 2 today, Acts 6, 1. Now in these days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there rose a murmuring of the Grecian Jews against the Hebrews, because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. Luke did not tell us how long it was from the day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2, until the time in Acts chapter 6. I'd like to know how much time passed. We've talked about this before. Some people have suggested that the events in Acts chapter 6 took place around 35-36 A.D. Depending on when you date the church, some people have dated that 33 A.D. That would mean that about 3 years have passed. If you go back a little bit, some would propose an earlier date, maybe 29 or 30 A.D., then you would have 5 or 6 years passing. So it doesn't seem like this was the day after the church was established. Some time has passed, but probably not decades and decades. We do know that the church was continuing to multiply. As you look at some of the previous descriptions, it's not far-fetched to say that the church may have now had 20,000 members. And you have all these people congregating there in the area of Jerusalem. So this was definitely a stronghold for the church. You find the word disciples used 28 times in this book, the first time being here. So this is an important word. And one source offered this note, which I think is good. It would apply in the business world as well. He said, a large accession of converts in any mission field invariably gives rise to fresh problems. That, in my mind, is a good point. You have had some other issues that have come up, for example, Ananias and Sapphira, maybe some other items that Luke chose not to record. But if you have a business, for example, and it's just going gangbusters, and it's hiring people and hiring people and hiring people, what do you think is going to come with that surge of hiring? You're going to probably have some problems. You're going to hire some people that may not be good workers, or they may be dishonest, other things, you're bringing in people. And you would hope that with the church, they're teaching about repentance, and they're teaching about godly living, and they know up front what they're trying to accomplish. You would hope that people would be living in the right way. But with that number of people, thousands and thousands, you're probably going to have a few bad apples along the way. Ananias and Sapphira would be one example of that. Now, have we already seen benevolence as far as the book of Acts? Yes. Back there in Acts chapter 2, remember towards the end of the chapter, they're meeting day by day, and what are they doing with their food? Sharing. All right, they're sharing the food. Acts chapter 2, verses 46 and 47. Skip Acts chapter 3, and then Acts chapter 4, what do you find towards the end of the chapter? Christians are
giving.
All right, they're willing to sell, they're willing to share. Now we can kind of understand in Acts chapter 2, people have come from outside the area, so they need some help. But even by that time in Acts chapter 4, verses 32, 34, and 35, men like Barnabas are willing to sell land, and you have this continued assistance. So this is by no means new as you look at the first century church. One source has suggested, and this may be right, when you think about the Jews, do you think that they were accustomed to, I'm going to write that down, the thought just kind of sprang into my mind, but do you think the Jews were accustomed to any kind of benevolent work? Yes. Yes. When you think about Matthew chapter 6, the alms, for example, Jesus talked about the giving of alms. So we know that the Jews were familiar with helping others. That was one of the things that they did. It's been proposed that the widows were getting help from the Jews. I don't know that that is anything I can prove or disprove. I think it is an interesting possibility. Now, if you were getting help as a Jewish, as a woman, and you were getting help from the Jewish folks, a couple things might be going on there. Number one, after you become a Christian, what might they be thinking? Yeah, you become a Christian, you've changed directions, so we don't want to help you. And they might have been nice about that, they might not have been too nice about that. Should anything have been coming from the Christian perspective? Let me put it in slightly different terms. You have a Christian today who is getting help from an organization, and you can take your pick. Anybody want to throw one out as far as an organization? Christian getting help outside the church.
Trustee.
Oh, all right. That's a very good, Jeff. Thank you. That's a really good one. Here's a person who's being helped by the township trustee. If that becomes known to the local congregation, should there be a twinge of guilt at a minimum on the part of Christians? Yes. I mean, we should be thinking what? This is one of ours. And since this is one of ours, what should we be doing? The help should be coming from us, not somebody downtown. So the Christians may have also been thinking that if these ladies had been getting some help from the Jews in the past. I will give you this quote. I think this is helpful. He says, the Jewish system of poor relief involved the poor bowl and the poor basket. The first, that is, the poor bowl was a daily distribution of food provided for the homeless. The second, that would be the poor basket, was a weekly distribution of food and clothing provided for poor families. In both cases, goods were provided. There was no cash given. When we look at our time, we may think that we have really turned the corner as far as helping people. We have various food distribution programs in this country. There have been food drops with military planes in other countries, but this isn't new. Helping people with food, helping people with groceries, helping people in various ways, medicine, it's been going on a long, long time. And God, if you think about the Old Testament, he had a program for that as well, didn't he? You owned a field, what was the rule? All right, you don't glean at all. You leave some out there for the poor, the orphans, the widows, and so forth. Widows in our day and time may not have as many difficulties. I'm not going to say that they are free of difficulties, but they're probably not going to have as many difficulties as widows did in the first century because things have changed a bit. If you are a widow in our day and time, as I said, there are sometimes life insurance policies, there are other provisions for you, but the Old Testament, that law that we were talking about, the provisions, Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 19 through 21, God recognized that they were going to have some specific difficulties. If you go back and you look at the situation of widows, you find that sometimes there was starvation. Some died because they didn't get a help. Now, in our day and time, if somebody dies of starvation, that's probably going to make at least the local news and maybe the national news. We just don't deal with starvation too well. But if you look at other countries, hey, some kids are out there starving on the street, orphans, widows, we really don't care. We have our goods, we have our needs, they're being met, so we are pretty well satisfied. But you do find the church, Acts chapter 6 and verse 1, they have this responsibility. They've apparently been taking this responsibility seriously for a good while. And widows in that day and time really struggled. I want to head you over to another passage that was written by Luke. This is Luke chapter 18, verses 2 through 5. This is in a completely different context. Jesus is talking about prayer. He uses a widow to illustrate the problem. But this also ties into what we're looking at in Acts chapter 6. I want you to see what was really the only recourse that a widow had. Now, she might have had some special circumstances, but generally, let's see what it was. Luke chapter 18, 2 to 5. Anybody there and want to read it? Maxine.
Saying, there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Now, there was a widow in that city, and she came to him, saying, get justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me.
All right. That's a good picture of what widows had to do in the first century. Judge, in this case, didn't want to help her, so what's the widow turn to? I'm going to
pester.
Another word would be I'm going to
annoy,
that would be another good word, or complain. I'm going to bring my case to him, and I'm just going to be knocking on his doorstep until he finally gives in. Now, complaining, annoying, in our day and time, that doesn't always work. Somebody might get a restraining order against you or shoot you if you don't get off their property. But in this day and time, it seems like widows, or women in general, but especially widows, that was their one recourse. You could go and you could pester somebody, and hopefully you would annoy them to the point where they would finally give in. And that's what the guy in Luke chapter 18 does. So it's another good passage by Luke to show you the kind of situation that widows were often in. Anything you want to add or ask before we move into this a little more deeply, Stan?
This situation as it exists, I never really thought about it before, but what does this say to their general law of honoring your father and mother?
Yeah, now, in fairness to the judge, she may not have had any kids.
Well, I had kind of gone beyond that. I mean, in general, weren't there families to take care of these widows?
Yeah, there should have been kids. And you remember from 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul said, if any careth not for his own, he's worse than an infidel, an unbeliever. So whatever the situation was with the kids, there were apparently some cases where they were not willing to take care of mom. And that was really sad, really bad. So if they were a Jew, then that was especially despicable. But if you were coming from a more Greek and a Gentile background, then maybe that's a little more understandable as far as some of the moral deficiencies there. Don?
Yeah, you made a comment that women were like chattel back then, too.
Yeah.
So, in other words, but we have cases like this one that they had a voice, that they were heard,
yeah,
by a judge, no less. And we have other cases in the New Testament where women were very vocal, and actually were prominent in their society. So, it's not a general rule, probably, that they were like chattel.
Yeah, you do have, for example, in Acts chapter 16, you have Lydia. She decided that she was going to be a business owner. And if she had something to sell, then obviously there would be some people that would be interested in that, especially if it were a product that people who had money would be interested in consuming. And being a seller of purple, that certainly would have been probably financially good for her. When you think about the lady in Proverbs 31, she was a woman who apparently was married. Talks about her home there, her children and so forth. Husband, you do have some passages. So there were some ladies who were of a mindset to do some things that put them in, I think, a somewhat distinctive category, but you also have plenty of other ladies that may have been homemakers, and once the husband died, especially as Stan said, if the kids were not willing to help, she was in a very difficult spot. So begging, pleading, annoying, that was about what she had to do to get some assistance.
Mindset that she couldn't go talk to the judge.
Yeah.
It was given to us that it was open for her to go talk to the judge.
Yeah, or she was going to make an opening. She was going to ensure that somehow he heard her. And yes. Now, you do have a case. I don't know that I would want to say this is apples to apples. But, for example, if you have an animal, maybe it's a pet inside your house, or maybe it's the cow out there in the barn. Sometimes animals can put up such a ruckus that finally you think, okay, I'll check the dish to see if you're going to be fed and so forth. So we probably don't want to go too far with that analogy. But we do recognize that both people and animals can put up such a fuss where finally they do get some consideration. Anybody else? Okay, let's go back to where we left off. We're not given a lot of details, but there was some kind of daily menstruation. That means that there was a free distribution of food. When you look at that word, which is translated ministration, we probably don't use that word too often, but it meant service, it meant ministry. That word is used to describe some other items in the New Testament. Remember over there in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 10 and verse 40, that word is used there as well. Martha was cumbered about with much serving. That's the same word. You find it in some other passages as well. Over a little later in Acts chapter 11 and verse 29, the brethren determined that they were going to send relief. They wanted to send service. They wanted to send some kind of aid. Angels, when you look at Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14, they are what? For those who are going to inherit salvation, they are ministers. That's the same word. So as you start looking at where this word is used elsewhere in the New Testament, you begin to find that it does describe some kind of service, some kind of ministry. Now, as you think about that word, diakonoi would be the word. And as you hear that pronounced, if you were to look at that as far as the spelling, D-I-A-K-O-N-I-A, that sounds a whole lot like the word deacon. And it is a form of the word. And that word, as far as another form, is going to describe deacons in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 8 and 12. The word daily is used only here in the New Testament. Now, as you look at the Jews and how they ate, historical sources indicate that they ate two times a day. So once again, we don't have a lot of details about this, but I wonder to some degree if back in Acts chapter 2, when Christians were getting together for a daily meal, if some of the widows weren't fed during that time, maybe all of them were. And then at that daily meal, just like we have, you have, for example, we've done this here, somebody sick, and they come to a potluck, and they're fed. And what do? We send food home. That just makes sense. We've got food here. You have a need. We're going to send food home with you. I wonder if maybe they didn't have a similar arrangement. There was food there. Widows were able to eat. And then some food is sent home with them for that second meal. They could have prepared that the next day. So I don't know exactly how it worked, but that certainly is one possibility. But in this case, however that food was being distributed, there was at least a problem. And how is the problem described? The people who were involved with the problem, they were, what was their reaction? Acts 6:1. Murmuring. When you see that word, how would you define that, or how do you think you'd define it?
Whining.
Well, okay. Whining would be one answer we might give. Any other answers? Well, let me ask it in this way. We read from Luke chapter 18, verses 2 through 5, right? Do you think that widow was murmuring, or do you think she was doing something else?
Something else.
When that widow showed up on the judge's doorstep, what was she doing?
Bothering.
Well, not just bothering, she was, but bothering him in the sense of she was...
Very vocal.
Oh, okay, very vocal, it was ongoing. But here, when you look at the word murmuring, what's suggested by that? Yeah, it's an undertone. It's not anything that's going to be very noticeable. You're going to have to be listening for that, and then you're going to hear the people beginning to complain. So it's sort of half under the breath. I know they're really late today, you know. You're trying to get your sandwich at the drive-thru and that kind of thing. So it's not something that's openly avowed. It has been described as secret displeasure. Then you have another word. And that key word is going to be the word neglected. That word is not used anywhere in the anywhere else in the New Testament and implies the matter was not a careless mistake, but a calculated comparison of one who was deemed more important. Now think about that. I'm going to give you that definition again because it is really important. They felt neglected. It implies not a careless mistake. If there's a careless mistake, do you think people can complain? Yeah, not as much. They still might be unhappy and they still might complain. But this word describes a calculated comparison of one who was deemed more important. When that happens, and it does today, what's going to occur? There's going to be at least some murmuring. And if that continues to grow, there may be an all-out rift or split. Now, one other point, and then we'll take Don's thought. We've talked about tense at various times. They feel neglected. You want to guess about the tense?
Ongoing.
Now, had this been once or had this been twice, they might have remembered it. Well, way back when I was shorter. Way back when I was cheated. You know, 6 months ago I didn't get my food. But this is day after day after day after day. And that sets the stage for what we're going to see in the following verses of Acts 6. Don?
Well, the ones in charge, the apostles, were Hebrew-speaking Jews. The ones that were complaining were Greek-speaking Jews. And the NASB says they were overlooked. Mm-hmm. Those indicate it wasn't on purpose, just because maybe the Hebrews looked down on the Greek-speaking Jews. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that it was an intentional oversight on the part of the apostles. But if people begin to reflect on something, we often say that perception is reality. And if you're being overlooked, it doesn't matter that it was not intentional. It's just we were overlooked, and the perception can be we're not being treated fairly. We're not getting a fair shake. And as you start looking for reasons for that, this seems to have been the reason that was given, that we are of a different group than they are. Therefore, we're being neglected, we're being overlooked, we're being skipped. Did you have...
Same as today, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as you start looking at this, and that's why I said we'll probably not get past Acts 6 and verse 2, you have the same kind of issue. It may not be food-related, but it's going to be the very same as far as the general nature of things. And there's some excellent points that we can make. Let's see... That was one of the points that I wanted to make quickly. This type of complaint has arisen numerous times since the first century. One person believes that he, she, or maybe a group, they are being treated differently. They're not being treated as well as another group. Can you think of some examples where that occurs sometimes?
In the church? Or
well, church or work world, it doesn't matter.
Well, racially.
All right. That could be, that it doesn't give us a specific example of what's happening, but as far as different groups, sometimes you might have this group of a particular race and says, well, they got this or they're getting this, we're of a different race, we're not getting this, therefore you are guilty of racism. You don't treat all races equally, you don't believe that all are of the same value. Ray?
Political field, we see that quite often if you're a Democrat, you're receiving more benefits. We see it in Indiana with Pence, where he was the governor. So he caters to Indiana a little more. We think about that, gun control, certain groups, no gun control. Other groups, very difficult, very strong. So yeah, there's a lot of different areas in our lives that I won't say we're overlooked, but we're neglected in some areas.
Sure. Politics, a good example there. You gave some illustrations. Anybody else?
Education.
All right. And what would you put there as far as some specifics?
There's just not, in some areas, there isn't educational classes for the NOE challenge. Sometimes also the schools, the first thing they cut, whenever they need to do a budget cut, comes in the arts and the music.
Yeah. The ratio of teachers over here, very small. This school on the other side of town, the ratio from student teachers, very high. They're getting this much money. You know, they've got the latest computers over here. They've got computers from 15 years ago. So people are especially sensitive to that when they see people. What about animals? Think animals can be sensitive to that?
No.
You don't?
Yes.
One dog gets a bigger biscuit than the other? I don't know how you label it, Don, but I can tell you that there are some dogs, if A gets a bigger biscuit than B, there's going to be some unhappiness.
Tim and Sean have a cat and dog both, and you pet one, and the other one's sitting right there.
Yeah.
I mean, he could be across the room when you start petting this one, like saying, no, he's sitting right there with his pet.
Yeah, or you take one out for a walk, probably not a cat, but you take one out for a walk, and the other doesn't get the walk, there's going to be some unhappiness. So it's interesting that not only with people, sometimes also with animals, you see that need to be even-handed or fair. What about in raises? Somebody gets a raise of, you know, maybe it's only a quarter an hour, but another person who is there working as the employee, they don't get the boy, they're jealous. They're unhappy. Now, maybe they get a different benefit, but still, in their mind, they want it to be absolutely equal. So people are very sensitive to this kind of thing. They have been for a long time. Another indication of how serious the problem was, and you have to look carefully at this, but as you look at the verse, it almost jumps off the page. Now, in these days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose murmurings of the Grecian Jews against the Hebrews. Because what? Their widows. You ever hear somebody talk about those people? We're sensitive to that, but here you have their widows, which sounds like, okay. So Luke is trying to tell us that this was a big deal. When Christians say, I and mine instead of ours and us, there are likely going to be problems. One source said, Satan, having failed to arrest the work of the gospel by external attacks, now sought to injure it by internal divisions. And I think that's probably true. The devil saw that with Peter and John and the other apostles, they could be beaten. That didn't stop things, so now let's stir up a rift between some of the women and maybe some of the people who were on this side or that side. Now, Don alluded to this earlier, but let's break it down a little bit more. You have who against who? You have the Grecians or the Greeks against the Hebrews. What do you think that means? Who were the Grecians?
Those that were surrounding areas, but not from Israel itself. They might have been brought in from even the far distance. They were into the city because of the holidays and things.
Okay, that very well could be. With that, we would maybe want to make a note about culture. What would the culture have been like compared to the Hebrews and the Greeks?
They had more gods.
Well, okay, the Greeks, they were associated with paganism. The Greeks, you would have been influenced by Greek thought, Greek language, Greek culture. If you are from a Hebrew, you're coming from a predominantly Jewish background. You know, that stuff that's associated with the Greeks and paganism, don't want their language. I'm a Jew. This is the religion that God gave, the Hebrew religion, and we're going to be over here. So they should have all been brethren, but there were some distinctions there. Don?
Well, I think the commentary says that the Jews that were dispersed went through the camp, and they were immersed in the Greek culture.
Yeah.
Except in Greek culture. They migrated back to Jerusalem, but they kept their culture and their language.
Yeah, Hellenized Greeks, or Hellenized Jews, depending on how you're going. But yes, they had adopted, you find that today. You have people from America, for example, they leave the United States and they go to a different culture. Maybe it's China, maybe it's Japan, maybe it's Africa. And because they're missionaries, what do they need to do in the field? What if they continue to live as an American? you're probably not going to go too well. So you need to assimilate. You need to put yourself into the mindset. You need to immerse yourself into that culture. Well, when you have lived in Africa for 25 years as a missionary, or Japan for 30 years, and you come back to the United States, guess what? It's almost culture shock for you, because you now think as a different culture thinks. You may predominantly speak a language that is not spoken by people in the United States, so it's very, very different. One more little point, and then we'll take a look at Acts chapter 6 and verse 2. The opening verses in this chapter leave no doubt about the church having some personal conflicts, some internal conflicts. Like today, if the problem had not been resolved, it could have resulted in a church split. We might not think about church splits as far as the first century, but here, when you think about the number of people, maybe 20,000 people were Christians by this point in time, a lot of widows, we believe, it could have been a significant issue. When you look at Acts chapter 6, the apostles, they become aware of this. What didn't they do? Yeah, they didn't hide their heads in the sand and push it under the rug and say, well, it'll get better. Or we're not going to deal with it. It's just too complicated. Are there some people today, both in the church and in the business world and in homes, that will do that? We just don't want to deal with it. It's too complicated. Somebody's going to get upset. Well, guess what? In Acts chapter 6, somebody was already upset. And if this wasn't addressed, it was not going to get any better. Don? Yeah, that rarely works. If you try to wait out a problem, generally it's only going to get worse. And the apostles apparently had enough insight on that to ensure that they didn't try to do that kind of issue. A couple of things as well. I think if you go back to the book of Numbers, and let's do that. I want to show you some passages. This could be complete coincidence, but there are too many parallels to overlook. I want to go back to the book of Numbers chapter 11, and we'll read multiple verses. I want you to see some parallels between Numbers 11 and Acts chapter 6. Who wants to be our Numbers 11 reader? All right, that'll be Gary. Thank you. Let's start out with Numbers chapter 11 and verse 4. All right, who shall give us flesh to eat? It sounds like they were hungry. Don't you have hunger in Acts chapter 6? Yes, there were some who were being neglected or overlooked. Now read that verse again, and I'm going to stop you. There it is. And the what multitude? And the mixed multitude. Isn't that interesting? You have in Acts chapter 6 a mixed multitude, don't you? The Grecians and the Hebrews. All right, so those are interesting parallels, but it doesn't stop there. Let's take a look at Numbers chapter 11 and verse 24.
And Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord and gathered the 70 men of the elders.
Stop. How many men?
70.
Does Moses get some helpers? Uh-huh. What do you find in Acts chapter 6? We need some helpers. How interesting. Let's go down to Numbers chapter 11 and verse 25.
And the Lord came down in a cloud and spake unto him, and took of the Spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders.
Stop. Gave the Spirit unto the 70 elders. Doesn't that match up in Acts chapter 6? Select men who are full of the Spirit. Now, we've not gotten there yet, but that's what you find in Acts chapter 6 and verse 3. And then let's take a look in Numbers chapter 11 and verse 31, Gary. Did the people get full? They were fed. They had plenty of food. What do we find in Acts chapter 6? Problem was resolved. The people got fed. So it's very interesting to me to go back to Numbers 11 and compare that with Acts chapter 6. You have comparison after comparison after comparison. I don't know if Numbers 11 was in the minds of the apostles. Maybe that was. or maybe that was something that was supernaturally brought to mind, or maybe that was something that they just skipped over. But I do, as I look at that, find a relevant lesson. And that is, when you have a problem come up in the church, where should you go for the solution? The Scriptures. Now, it may take some time to figure out exactly where the solution is. You might have to put several heads together. Maybe you're going to use principles instead of specific passages, but God's Word is always the best place to go, and don't try to bury issues. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down to Acts 6:2? All right, let's look at that second verse. And the 12, that would be the apostles, called the multitude of the disciples unto them and said, "It is not fit that we should forsake the word of God and serve tables." The problem of the food distribution either became known or was known to the apostles, not just Peter, and it was discussed. As you mentioned, there are some congregations which, when problems come up, they're just ignored. Let's sweep them under the rug. Let's not pay any attention to those. But that's not what was done here. I think when you look at the 12, that's got to include Matthias, Acts chapter 1 and verse 26. And you also have to, as you look at this, I think especially as you consider the following verses, was this a democratic solution? Did they call the congregation together and say, "Hey guys, what do you think? Come up with a solution." Did they do that, or did they already have a solution in mind?
They already had a solution in mind. They turned it over to the congregation, but they told them how many to choose out and let them then make the choice.
Yeah, some input was taken from the congregation, some valuable input, but the apostles had already determined the direction to go. That is, we're not going to do this any longer, and this is the direction that we need to go. We need to have some other fellows, just like we read from Numbers chapter 11, who are going to be of some assistance. But you do have, and we've done this here at times, you do have an example of what we might refer to as a congregational meeting. They have the disciples coming together, the matter is discussed, they do accept some input, and then things are moved forward. The apostle says it would not be fit, that is pleasing, acceptable, or desirable for them to forsake the word of God and serve tables. Now that too is expressed with ongoing action, it's expressed with the present tense. That suggests to me that this was something that, if not a daily matter that was being put on the apostles, it was something that was ongoing, at least on a fairly regular basis. Do you think the apostles meant that the widows were not important? Who cares about those women? If they didn't care about the women, what wouldn't they have done? They wouldn't have done anything. They would have just said, let this go and it'll all kind of work out somehow. Every member of the body is important. Paul made that clear in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning with verse 14 and going down through verse 24. So as they assessed the situation, they knew what they needed to do, and that was continue to spread the gospel and stick with that work. And they also realized, as we talked about from Numbers chapter 11, others could be brought into the work and do that work. Now, as you think back a little bit, in Acts chapter 4, verse 35, let's skip back across the page there a bit and look at that verse once again. And laid them at the apostles' feet. That would be the money that was coming in. And distribution was made unto each according as any had need. Here you have the apostles. They're trying to preach and teach. They have funds coming in, and they're trying to make some distributions there. Maybe that's tied in with the widow problem in Acts chapter 6. Maybe not. And then they're also trying to deal with the widows that we have before us in Acts chapter 6. And that must have been overwhelming as you look at the workload that was on them. When you think about the number of widows, we don't know exactly how many there were, but do you think there could have been dozens? If you've got 20,000 Christians, that is entirely possible. Maybe you have hundreds of widows a day. And feeding people. Anybody ever been involved with feeding people? How many people have been involved with feeding people on a mass scale? All right, probably 8 or 9 of us. I've done that twice at a Boy Scout camp. And I've done that at 2 Boy Scout camps. And that was enough, one summer. One scout camp was arranged in a way where the kids were all designed, or all set up to cook their own meals. And what we did, maybe a little bit like Acts chapter 6, we were in the kitchen area. We had food coming in from trucks. And the kids would give us their menu choices. And sometimes, I've mentioned this before, but sometimes they had crazy things like, give us ice cream for breakfast. Well, we wouldn't do that. But they would give us their menu choices, and then we would load that food into a pickup truck. And we would go, and the kids, we would, all right, troop, 142 and 246, whatever it might be. and we would pass the food out in milk crates and bags. And that wasn't too bad. I mean, you still have some issues there. Well, we didn't get our milk, we didn't get our cheese, or whatever it was, and you have some basic problems, but that wasn't too bad. Then I went over to another scout camp, which was designed very, very differently. The one that I just described was in Illinois. Went over one year that same year and worked the scout camp in Iowa. And the Iowa camp was, we're going to bring you and we're going to feed you three meals a day. Wow, I'd done some restaurant work before, but that was something else. You know, kids threw stuff on the floor, just got as much pancake syrup as they could to gob up the tray. And I'm not saying that the widows did that kind of thing, but if you're involved with food preparation, you're involved with food distribution on any level, it can be a challenge. Even today, when you start seeing people being fed out of trucks, there's some work to it. So as we start thinking about what was going on here, it must have been a massive effort, even if you have just a few dozen widows involved. I will give you this note. Some have argued that widows constituted nearly a third of the women in the Roman world, and 40% of those between 40 and 50 years of age. If impoverished widows constituted only half of such numbers, despite the large percentage of poor widow in general in Mediterranean antiquity, they could have easily overwhelmed a community's resources to care for them. So when you think about this problem in Acts chapter 6, again, half are being fed to the point where they don't have any issues. Apparently, the other half feel like they're not being fed well. This is something that really could have overwhelmed the church and consumed them. So this was not a small problem. Anything that you want to add or ask before I start offering some practical notes? Stan?
Out of these first six or seven verses, what would you say was the point of this dissertation?
Well, let me give some additional information as far as application, and then we'll come back to the question if that doesn't sufficiently deal with it. I think that there are some points today. One of those points of application would be this. When you have people who are unhappy, they obviously can go down several roads, can't they? What would one possible path be? I'm unhappy in my local, could be the job, but we'll think about church. I'm unhappy in my local congregation, so what am I going to do? I'm going to leave. Option number one, or?
Go somewhere else.
All right, so same answer. What else? All right, that's kind of at the other extreme. I'm either going to leave or I'm going to throw a fit until I get my way. Some other people might choose something else. All right, some people would say, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to suffer silently. And then some other people might murmur. I think those are the four basic choices that we have. We have an old expression, you can either be part of the problem or you can be part of the solution. And here you have some people who are apparently willing to be part of the solution. So as you think about this, one of the lessons that I would draw is that when you look at a group of people, especially a congregation, do you think that people should be perceptive in a local congregation to potential problems? I think that's good for every member, whether you're young or whether you're old or whether you're male or whether you're a female. Look around. Keep your eyes open. And if you see a potential problem or something that is an issue, do what? Well, at least voice your concern and say, I think that this is an area where some help might be needed. Don?
Well, I find it interesting that the apostles, apparently they were serving tables.
Yes.
They were waiting on the people. And that they did not notice that the Greek-speaking people were being neglected, overlooked. And only when somebody complained to them did they realize that they'd miss something. I don't know how many people they were serving, I don't know whether they were serving actual food or what they were doing, but they did miss something.
Yeah. Well, as I said, in my experience with food distribution, you have a lot of people coming in for food depending on how that was, especially if that was going house to house. It is easy. And if you think about going back to the racial point, you think sometimes, for example, that people congregate, you know, we're going to separate ourselves because of age, or we're going to separate ourselves because of common interests, whatever it might be. And if you've got the widows separating in two different areas, the Grecians are kind of over here, the Hebrews are over here, with the problems of food distribution, you know, some things just may not have been communicated very well. It's been suggested, and I don't like this suggestion because the apostles had the gift of tongues, but it's been suggested that there was a language barrier. And that, but again, I, with the people trying to be Christians, to me, that just doesn't sit right. I think that they would have tried to overcome that. And with the apostles being able to speak in different tongues, to me, that just doesn't seem to be a good explanation. But people have struggled to explain why one group was being neglected while the other was being cared for. But... And as I say, maybe the food was going in a general area, and that was the serving tables. It wasn't literally that they were waiting on tables, and they thought the food was going to go out to every table, and for whatever reason, that wasn't happening. So we don't have all those details, but there definitely was some issue. A couple of the quick points here, and then Stan, we'll see if you want to add something to kind of close out the class. You do have, and this is pictured throughout Acts in probably half a dozen different passages, when you have all these Christians together, this issue is discussed. Do you have calmness, or do you have hate, anger, uncertainty, and some nasty behavior? People are not angry. People are coming together, they recognize the issue, it's being addressed, and there's calmness. But when you look at some of the other crowds, the non-Christian crowds in the book of Acts, Acts 18, Acts 19, Acts chapter 21, you have some riotous actions on the part of the unsaved. Another quick point here would be that this is kept on a local level. There was no need for some kind of headquarters or regional boards.